How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
No, that's enough.
All right, next wraparound.
Next, good next one. Wraparound. What's this one?
This is Jeff Ryan. Let me get the book that he did. Oh, hold on. I'll be cutting it up. Ooh. Cutting what I do every week, I cut out all of Bill's statements. Mouse.
I did forget we were doing a podcast, and I was just like yelling at Bill about it.
Yes, that's all right. That's what we do. It's great.
The new book
started, like, creeping up on me.
I tell you, we're getting mad.
I love it. Really close.
My old radio partner on WTSR, Jeff Ryan, wrote a best-selling book called "A Mouse Divided: The History of Mickey Mouse."
No kidding.
Yeah, it's a bestseller.
And you had a talk with him.
I'm going to be talking to him. Yeah.
You will be talking to him.
Yeah, well,
like in the next 2 minutes, because this is the wraparound for that.
We're doing
the wraparound right now.
So things are getting a little loose.
Jeff Ryan wrote a book about a mouse
called "A Mouse Divided," and now
were on the radio with him.
Yeah, back in college,
really?
we were on WTSR. WTSR in Trenton. Open your mind.
You were on radio in Trenton
in college.
Really?
It was college radio.
They play good music.
We were on a, we had a comedy show.
I get it. What station is it?
We had a comedy show called Laugh Damn It. And then I wanted to do, here's a true story. I wanted to do a talk show. And they said, we can't do a talk show. We have no calls. Like, you can't call in and we don't have commercials. You'd have to talk uninterrupted for 2 hours by yourself. And I said, hold my beer. And at the end of every episode. Oh, yeah.
You were drinking?
No. I have all the tapes of me doing the Jay Black Show, which was a 2-hour talk show, where it would be just 2 hours of me talking. Uninterrupted. And then at the end, it would always be, I have so much more to say, but I got to hang up.
Tell me there are tapes.
There are tapes. Yeah. My
you want to listen to that?
Yes. I think I may want to play it.
You want to hear College Jay?
He
sounds a lot like.
Is it on cassette tapes?
It's on cassette. Yeah.
No kidding.
I'd have to dig them up, but I could bring them in. The Jay Black Show.
What would you play them on? Is there a way to play cassettes in here?
I'll play it on the broadcast.
With the cassette?
I have no idea. I'll figure that out when I get to it. I don't know.
I assume. Yeah, the Mennonites probably have something.
They'll know how to do it.
Anyway, Jeff Ryan was on the comedy show with me. And
but before we get to Jeff Ryan, you know what I'd like to do?
Hear from our sponsors.
Yeah.
We have a couple new sponsors in 2018. Rob Dukansky of RE/MAX First Advantage. You can reach him at 855-350-1015 or online at robsellsnj.com. True story, Rob sold my house in 3 days. I spent a lot of time in real estate. I'm a licensed broker in a few states, and I can tell you Rob Dukansky is the best. We're happy to have him on board, Speaking Millennial. Our other big sponsor for 2018, CSI Group. The CSI Group, you can reach them at 1-800-TAX-LAWS or CSICPA.com. This is a family business, but they've got locations all over New York and New Jersey. And I'm going to tell you, taxes are too complicated to go it alone. Don't think that you're going to go online and just plug and play and get it done. You don't want to have a letter from the IRS a couple years after you file your taxes and find out you made a big mistake. And the CSI Group will give you a free consultation. So all you got to do is call them at 1-800-TAX-LAWS and they will help you out. Remember, you don't know what you don't know. I'm happy to talk about one of our sponsors, great sponsor, good friend, Vinny Brand, owns the Stress Factory in New Brunswick. The website is stressfactory.com. Vinny Brand runs one of the great comedy clubs, honestly, in the country. Not only does he have A-list comics coming in almost every single week, but the show is great. The food is fantastic. The staff, the service, there's parking right next door. If you've not discovered the Stress Factory in New Brunswick, you've got to get there. Go to stressfactory.com and buy your tickets. It's a great night out, reasonable cost, absolutely hilarious entertainment, great food and hospitality. Stressfactory.com.
Looking for a car, new or used? This is Jay Black to tell you there's no better destination than our friends at the Flemington Car and Truck Country family of brands, located on Route 202 and 31 in Flemington and at Flemington.com. Here you will find 16 automotive brands, plus over 500 available certified pre-owned vehicles to fit every budget. You'll get the financing, the trade-in value, and the credit you need, and dependable vehicle service maintenance that delivers peace of mind. Choose from Ford, Lincoln, Audi, Volkswagen, Porsche, Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, Cadillac, Infiniti, Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, Ram, BMW, and Subaru. Shop them all, knowing every Flemington Car and Truck Country location has earned the coveted dealer-rated customer satisfaction award for 2017 based on your reviews. The Flemington Car and Truck Country family of brands, an honest, straightforward organization that has been satisfying customers for over 40 years. Family, independent, not corporate. Visit any of their 8 dealership locations on routes 202 and 31 in Flemington or at Flemington.com. There's a lot of really cool stuff about our new sponsor, Tito's Handmade Vodka. And I could tell you about all of it. I could tell you how great it tastes. I could tell you how it's the best way to relax after a hard day. I could tell you that it's distilled from corn, so it's gluten-free. I could tell you that it's made right here in America, in Texas. And not just Texas, the best part of Texas, Austin. It's the best part of Texas. I tell you the thing I love most about Tito's Handmade Vodka. They use old-fashioned pot stills and they taste test every batch. It's the same way that they make fine single malt scotches and high-end French cognac. Why is this amazing? Well, it's amazing because as John F. Kennedy said, we don't go to the moon because it's easy, we go to the moon because it's hard. And this is a harder way to make vodka, but it makes for better vodka. That's why it's handmade vodka, and that's why you gotta go out and get Tito's Handmade Vodka right now.
And thank you. Now, Jeff Ryan.
Wait, can you tell us about the book a little bit?
So I haven't read the book yet, it's here. I'll read you what it says.
Well, not only have you not had the book, you haven't even talked to Jeff Ryan yet.
This is a Simon & Schuster book. Almost everything you know about Mickey Mouse is wrong. He wasn't Disney's first star. Steamboat Willie wasn't his first movie. Mickey wasn't a nice guy. And Walt Disney didn't invent him. So we're going to find out. Jeff Ryan learned all this stuff about Mickey Mouse. Yep. There's lots of controversy on it. And you know what? I actually, Jeff found, he did an interview with the frozen head of Walt Disney. That's how he got all this info. He went in.
Is that like you interviewing Eric Scott's friend?
No. Oh, yeah, yeah. So let's talk to Jeff Ryan now.
Hey, everybody. Oh, there we go. Well, thanks, Bill and Jessica. So what we did, Jeff, I'm here, by the way, with Jeff Ryan, noted author, scientist, laser discoverer.
Oh, wow. So many predicate nominatives. Thank you very much, Jay. You can keep on inventing fake things that I've done.
Inventor of the artificial pancreas. He has not released it to the world yet. It's more of a working prototype.
Yeah, well, someone invented the real pancreas, and, you know, I wanted to one-up them.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said someone and not some man. That shows you're very progressive. Hashtag Jeff Ryan too. So I'm here with Jeff Ryan, who is a good friend of mine from college and an author. And Jeff, what we did was we did a batch recording of podcasts last week.
Uh-huh.
And Bill and Jessica, my podcasting co-hosts, we recorded a wraparound. So basically, Bill and Jessica go, Jay, who are we talking to? And I said, Jeff Ryan. And then I mentioned, and I need to clarify this for the wraparound purposes, mm-hmm. that you actually interviewed Walt Disney's frozen head for this particular book. Is that true?
I see. I understand.
Is that, can you not reveal that? If you can't reveal, don't even bring it up. I don't want to get you in trouble. I know that you had access to the catacombs. So Bill and Jessica record that part of the podcast. Then they go, all right, Jay, take it away. And then I have to pretend like Bill and Jessica are listening.
I see.
Because it's going to come back and they're going to say, that was great. They never listen. I've recorded a lot of these. That's my air conditioner starting up, by the way. So just before we get to the actual interview, just so everybody knows, my wife has known about this interview for a week at least. Last night, she invites all of the cousins. There's like 9 kids in my house right now and my sister-in-law. My wife left for yoga, I guess because she's a little stressed out by screwing up my podcast. She was like, I need to work real hard to figure this out, how to make it the worst possible recording scenario. And then I am going to go to yoga. So we're outside. So if there's a lot of background noise, if you hear birds tweeting, I guess it works. It's a Disney story, right?
You have rabbits in your backyard, which is great. And rabbits don't make any noise. So I need to tell people that there are rabbits.
Yeah, I guess rabbits don't make a sound, do they? That no. I know of.
They only make one sound at the very end.
Wait a second. You mean when they're dead or when they come?
I was thinking death.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I thought that was going a little too far, but apparently it's not far enough.
Well, we do have an explicit rating on this. I'm sorry, everybody. I honestly,
I honestly didn't know if you were making a sex joke. Like, perhaps, you know, at the end, you're like, rawr!
I am used to pivoting over to Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. So that's where I was setting up to go to, and I thought that I had crossed a line.
Well, okay, yeah, so I can cut that out if that's going to be damaging to you. Well, because here's the thing. You wrote two books, right? This is your second book. Is that true?
Yeah.
And this book, the first book was a biography of Super Mario.
Exactly.
And from what I can tell, I don't know if you want to give numbers or anything. I don't know. It seems like it did really well. Did it do great?
It's still doing decently well. It was only like last week I looked up the numbers because for years and years I didn't want to look up the numbers. And I thought, oh, people are actually still buying this book. I guess because people are still interested in Mario.
Yeah, well, I mean, here's how I know. I subscribe to Audible. And whenever I pick out a new book, it does suggestions. Mm-hmm. And that dang Super Mario book is suggested every time.
Oh, wow.
And I guess because we have a lot of overlapping nerd interests.
Yeah.
So it comes up every time. And I look at the number of reviews, and it's got like 5,000 reviews. Now, I don't know if that's a lot of, like, you know, Russian bots. I don't know, like, what.
Yeah, now it has 3 reviews. We say they called them all down.
Yeah, see, I don't know how. Could be positive, could be negative. Who knows? Like, maybe they've identified Super Mario Brothers as good compromise on Trump, you know, like.
Yeah, I believe where the sweet spot is that people are interested in Super Mario, but gamers don't want to actually pick up a book and read it.
So they'll listen to it while they're playing.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, and that's better than actually reading it, because if they bought the book, then they'd never read it.
Did you narrate the book yourself, or did they get somebody?
No, they got someone to read it, and they got someone else to read the Mickey Mouse book.
Okay, so I want to get to the Mickey Mouse book, but I got to ask this. Like, yep. Did you ask to read your own book, or is there like a discussion, and do they go like, hey, start talking, and they're like, no, we'll get someone. Don't worry, we'll get someone.
No, I didn't ask because I was scared if I did, they would say that, and then I would start to like push and say, no, I've got a great voice, I can really do this, and then they'd have to sit me down and say, okay, here's how much it costs to hire a radio engineer. Here's how many extra hours per day you would have to do because you're not a professional.
Right.
Here's how ass it would sound, and let's bring in a professional who's going to be much cheaper and make it sound better.
Was that person Dr. Dave? So that was a reference. Dr. Dave was our Jeff and I were on the radio.
Yes.
In college. We were on Laugh Dammit together. You, me, Vin Nardiello. Mm-hmm. I would say perhaps the greatest power trio in TCNJ history. I mean, we've all gone on to such greatness, you know.
And there were like 4 or 5 other people that would come in over the years of Laugh Dammit. We had a fake Vinny for one semester.
Who's fake Vinny?
It was another guy named Vin DiCaro. His name was actually Vin. Oh. And the real Vin couldn't do it because he had scheduled a class that time. So I lucked into another guy who wanted to do it.
Do you remember, by the way, how Vinny and I met and he brought me on to Laugh Dammit?
I know he brought you on, but I didn't know how you guys met.
Just knowing the history of Vinny and myself, mm-hmm. The fact that we met in a feminist studies class has to be the greatest bit of irony ever. Vinny hated me when he first met me because I was very, I raised my hand a lot. And if you listen to me on the podcast, you know, I will, if something gets in my crawl, I got to talk about it or else something will happen mentally. So every time it would be getting ready to end class, she'd be like, are there any questions? And I'd be like, I've got about 74. Explain to me how this is, you know, where's your sources? I would always say, where's your sources? I was, you know, my college self might have been like a young Ben Shapiro or a young a Twitter egg for the amount of douchiness that I had in myself.
I was going to say, like in the feminist class, like, I would like to mansplain some things before we go.
Yeah. So for everybody that didn't understand what the lady said, let me tell you what she really meant. No, I kept asking for cross-cultural studies. That's the thing that always drove me nuts, because when she said that attraction is a complete social construction, I wasn't necessarily saying, well, okay, you know, because I was deep into like Richard Dawkins and that sort of stuff. I wasn't quick to say like, no, you're wrong. Attraction is completely biological. But I thought that there were some aspects of attraction that could not be altered by society. Like, for instance, fat or skinny, I thought was probably a construction based on their ideas of health. So healthy is always attractive. And I kept going like, I couldn't train my son to be attracted to sores. You know what I mean? Like there might be like a genetic quirk where maybe, I'm sure Japan has pornography dedicated to like hentai sores or whatever. But I just didn't think you could. And she would go, well, there's a difference of opinion on that. And I kept going, well, where is it? Show me the source and I'll go read it. And she'd be like, all right, moving on. So there's a lot of, like, she was a sociologist, which I think you and I can both agree sociology is complete and utter bullshit, right?
Now, you are in the middle of a 20-year project of teaching your son to only appreciate women with sores.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, just to win the argument.
Who cracked his left hand? Have you ever heard of this guy?
Oh, yes, every day for like 10 or 20 years, something like that.
Yeah, and then he was like, see, no arthritis in my left hand. First off, not exactly the best statistical approach ever, but okay. Yes, I'm trying to get my son into girls with sores. I just show him pictures of a young Cindy Crawford with a photoshopped, a giant herpes sore on her face. Right where the mole is. I put a herpes sore. It's easy to do. There's a target there. But speaking of herpes, Jeff, let's get to your book.
You sound like my publisher. Yeah.
So I'm so proud of you because one book... that people will take a flyer on one book. But when you do a follow-up book, that means, number one, the first book was good. They liked the writing process with you. How long did it take you to go from finishing Super Mario, yeah, to getting, and if it's a mouse divided.
A mouse divided.
Right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it took like 6 or 7 years. I thought it would take like one, but... what I was writing just kept on expanding, and I realized, I have to talk about World War II also and read enough about World War II and all of the 1930s and learn about animation, which I knew nothing about. I had seen 1.5 Mickey Mouse cartoons when I started to write this, but I think that's how most people feel about Mickey Mouse. Like, oh yeah, he's a super famous mouse. Like, I don't really know much about him.
Right.
And even if you grew up and watched the Disney Channel growing up, the Mickey Mouse cartoons are in black and white, so they don't show them anymore. Right. They'll show the Donald Ducks and all the others in color.
There's a great line from I think it was what do you call it, the Ace and Gary, what was that on Saturday Night Live, do you remember that, the TV Funhouse,
the ambiguously gay duo,
but they also did like TV Funhouse Vault and all that. Mm-hmm. There's a trip into the Disney Vault and Mickey's leading it, and at the end, he goes, we'll keep bringing you laughs for years. And the kids turn and go, wait, you're supposed to be funny? And there is something to be said, like, he's more of a famous mouse for being a corporate symbol.
Exactly.
Than he is for being any kind of entertainment aspect, right?
Yes. I mean, yeah, and Donald Duck, when he showed up in 1934, that was one of, like, the nails in Mickey's coffin, because if you had to write a Mickey Mouse cartoon and you had all these rules about what Mickey couldn't do, it's very hard. It's very limiting.
Right.
Mickey is not allowed to have any faults or to learn from his faults, and that takes so much of basic drama and conflict out of the way. Donald Duck is like an It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia character. Right. He's just nothing but faults. He's the worst of every single person.
Well, that's why Milton chose the devil for Paradise Lost and not Jesus, because yeah, like, hard to have a main character that's sympathetic if he's always doing correct, right?
Yeah.
When did the rules come in for Mickey? Because one of the things that the early cartoons had was Mickey was not a Donald Duck figure, but he was a figure of mischief. And as it seems, he's gotten like more and more the symbol of the Disney Corporation. He became more and more that perfect character. Yes. Was that the 30s that happened, or was that...
That was in the 30s, after Walt had stepped away from actually writing all the Mickey Mouse cartoons. Other people came on and they started to drive Mickey very straight and narrow down the road.
Right.
Because early on, Mickey was closer to the previous Walt Disney character, Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, who I can't believe we've already talked about on this podcast. And Oswald didn't have a personality. He was just like... it was like watching an actor in a bunch of skits, where he can be anything because you're just watching the actor.
Right. He's a character that just becomes what's necessary versus having a personality.
Yes.
I think a lot of sports fans know Oswald the Lucky Rabbit because Oswald was part of the trade for John Madden, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes. Oswald the Lucky Rabbit in 2006 was traded for Al Michaels in order for Al Michaels to go over to do Monday Night Football.
Right, because if I'm not mistaken, NBC somehow had the rights to Oswald, right?
It was that they always had the rights to Oswald, and Walt Disney was just the gun for hire who was writing and drawing him.
Right.
And when Walt found that out, he's like, screw this. I'm never going to work for anyone again. I'm going to be my own boss and own everything.
Which is funny because I'm not sure that a lot of the animators got to keep their IP after working for Walt. You know?
No, when Walt said, I want to own everything, he didn't mean we at Disney. He meant I am going to own everything.
Right. So when Al Michaels wanted to leave his Disney contract to go to NBC, Oswald finally came home. Was that just a legacy move on their part? Was that just a move? I don't know if I know this isn't your area of expertise, but that was an odd move at the time for even I was in that very slim demographic of football fan and Disney corporate watcher. You know what I mean? I don't know if there was a lot of that. And I was like, well, wait a second. They've never done anything with Oswald. Is it just that they want to protect Walt's early work so it didn't get out and sort of tarnish the brand?
Yeah, there's a lot of money spent just on like Disney heritage and bringing things back. Walt Disney himself and Salvador Dali worked on a short called Destinos right after World War II.
Wait a second. Destinos was also the name of our language program for the Spanish thing in TCNJ. Do you remember this?
Yes, with Don Fernando.
Don Fernando. Yes.
But this has nothing to do with Don Fernando.
This is so disappointing. Yeah. I would have loved if Salvador Dali was the architect of our Spanish language telenovela that we watched. For those of you that don't know, at TCNJ, if you took Spanish, you learned by watching a telenovela about Don Fernando called Destinos. And at the end of every episode, it would turn and like Don Fernando was the aging scion of a large Spanish plantation and his daughter lived in Argentina or something.
And they all spoke in like second grade Spanish.
It'd be like, yeah, if we were teaching English, we're going, Jeff, how was your day?
My day was good, Jay. I will go to the library.
The library, you say? I often go to the library to get books. Books are at the library. Yeah, it seems like everybody in Destinos had a stroke recently. They were all trying to like rebuild their vocabulary. So Destinos was the Salvador Dali.
Yes, and they worked for like a year, and they had literally 17 seconds of animation after a year of it. So normally you'd be like, okay, that's a failed project. But like 60 years later, someone's like, let's take, I don't know, $10 million and let's finish that short up. You know, it's halfway done, basically, 17 seconds.
Well, I mean, you have Walt Disney and Salvador Dali on a short. I'm going to watch that short. I'm surprised I haven't seen it. Is that one that didn't show up on a lot of the Disney collections, I imagine?
It's weird. There are no actual characters. It's truly like a Salvador Dali painting come to life over 7 minutes. Right. And after 2 minutes, you want to tap out and say, okay, I've had enough drugs right now. Yeah. I am all drugged up. Thank you.
I just imagine Walt watching Un Chien Adu. Is that the name of that?
Oh, Un Chien Andalou.
Andalou, yeah going...
Well film.
Yeah, going, hey, you know what? I think I need some of that surrealism in my cartoons. So Oswald the Rabbit turns into Mickey Mouse.
And they're basically the same character design, except they just swapped out the ears.
You know, Walt as a artist, seems more he's better as a studio head than artist, just looking at his early work. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, he stopped animating sometime around 1926 or something like that, once he brought in his best friend and business partner and head animator, Ub Iwerks, who's the other guy that my book is about.
Oh, almost as famous, I would say, as Walt Disney. I mean, you can't think of Walt Disney without thinking of Ub Iwerks. Yeah. I'm guessing just from the fact that this is the first time I'm ever hearing his name, Walt maybe muscled him out of the creative process and the business process at some point?
That's kind of what people think. The actual story was that Ub quit. He got tired of, after 10 years of working with Walt, the 1 year of success they had with Mickey Mouse, Ub got tired of Walt treating him like an employee who was misbehaving instead of like a friend and business partner. So he said, I'm quitting. I'm going to make my own cartoon studio. Okay. Are you wearing a protective cup right now?
Always. I have children.
Okay, yeah. Great. So when he quit, he sold his share in Disney for $3,000, which was like a year's salary, and he used that to found his new animation company. It was a 20% share in Disney.
What would that 20% share be worth now, Jeff?
That would be worth $32 billion.
And Ub Iwerks company, how's that doing?
Have you heard of Ub Iwerks before 10 seconds ago?
Listen, I don't know. Maybe they're big in Japan. I hear this story, Jeff, and I think the only thing I can think of is Ub Iwerks' wife. It's the only thought that I have. As he comes home, he goes, I can't take it. I'm out. You know what? I'm just as good as Walt. I'm going to quit. and I'm gonna make my own studio. And I just picture his wife going, yeah, but, you know, maybe Walt seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders. Maybe think this out. He's like, no, woman, I will prove you and the world wrong. And then 3 years later, they're divorced and destitute. Am I right? Did I correctly anticipate what happened?
Oob wasn't the sort of person to have any sort of emotions like that. He was very reserved and buttoned up.
Oh, okay.
So he wouldn't have ever like gotten above a 6 or 7. That was one of the problems when he went off on his own. His idea of comedy, and he actually pitched this as a gag, was opening up the hood of a 6-cylinder engine, a 6-cylinder car, and inside is an 8-cylinder engine.
That's wow. Yeah. That's pretty hilarious, actually. You know what? As far as what I can tell from a lot of radio comedy, having been involved in radio for a while, you might actually have a place on America's talk radio stations. So the question that I have is this story, it takes place over the course of the entire life of Walt Disney and Oob Iwerks, or
it goes up until, my book at least, goes up until the end of World War II. And then I briefly say what happened afterwards, because that's when you start getting into the parks, and that's when Walt stopped being interested in animation.
Right.
And for about 30 years, Disney didn't do any real animation. There were still one or two like movies that would come out every couple of years, but for the most part, they moved on to live action, onto TV, onto documentaries, and then onto the parks.
It is interesting. When I think of 1950s and 1960s Disney, I think of, you know, the Mary Poppins, and I guess the computer wore sneakers or the tennis shoes.
Yes, starring young teen idol Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell, yeah. And you know what? I'll always thank Walt Disney for giving me Kurt Russell and Annette Funicello, you know, two of my greatest crushes. I think we've all been there. I'm interested about something you said earlier in the interview, where you said that as you started to expand your sort of scope on this story, you understood like, oh, crap, I got to learn about World War II. I got to learn about this.
Yeah.
Is there a sense of panic when it comes to that? And what I mean by is this. Sometimes I will be asked, I do a radio segment, and I'll be asked to do some research on something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm kind of like you in the sense of, I want to know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And then you realize, like, that question that you asked me has lots of different, like, pathways that it can go down, and I got to read about this, I got to read about that. And then at the end, I'm not sure necessarily I'm giving you the right answer, so I want to couch it in 75 different, like, well, you know, some people think it's this, but actually, like, I get panicked that I'm going to say something wrong, and nobody gives a shit. Like, nobody's listening to the radio going, he got the ratings wrong on that, let's call in. But I give a shit, and it scares me I'm going to get something wrong. Do you have that same sense of panic?
Oh, yeah, I feel the same way, especially because the stuff I'm writing about, people know a lot more. There are people who have designed the Mario game, so they know it inside and out much better than I do. And with Disney, there are people whose entire lives are just revolving around Disney. So if I got any fact wrong, they're going to let me know.
Oh, God, I didn't even think about that. Not only are you dealing with, like, a book out in the public that is filled with facts ostensibly that you found out, you're dealing with fan bases that are nuts.
I had 3 sentences total in the Mario book about a video game console called the Atari Jaguar. I don't know if you remember the Atari Jaguar.
I remember. Was that a 64-bit? That was their whole thing?
I think it was 32-bit.
It was like a leap about the current systems. It went one up, but nobody gave a shit because it was Atari.
Right, exactly. So I had 3 sentences about it, and there was someone who did not read the book, I don't think, but read a review which mentioned that I had briefly mentioned the Atari Jaguar and wrote, this guy doesn't know anything about the Atari Jaguar. He then went to a second social network and wrote a review of the book that was, this guy knows nothing about the Atari Jaguar. He then went to Amazon and wrote a low-star review that was just, this guy doesn't know about the Atari Jaguar.
There's a... I read the book about Steve Bannon. I'm forgetting it now. I think it's called...
Devil's Bargain?
Devil's Bargain. I was going to say Human Sloth. It was one of the two. Melted Candle, Steve Bannon. What was it again? What'd you say? What was the name of it? I just lost it because I was thinking of my fake funny titles.
Devil's Bargain.
Where they talked about his sort of... Like, he got involved with, what's the name of the website now? I can't even remember. I want to call it Breitbart.
Yeah.
I wanted to call it, I'm thinking computers game, computer game, something. I would have called it Borderbrund. Do you remember that computer game company?
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, Borderbrund. He involved, and I'm like, no, that wasn't true. So he got involved with Breitbart because before that, he was involved in a company that did Chinese gold farming for online video games.
Oh, yeah.
So he sort of like got onto the board of this company. And his takeaway wasn't necessarily that this was a sustainable business program or plan, because it wasn't, you know. But he saw these kids who were willing to pay hundreds of dollars to get gold for World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. But then he saw what he later would call weaponized autism, which he essentially said, there is a group of young men on the internet that is so focused on the thing that they care about. If I can make them care about Trump, or not Trump necessarily, but about my politics, mm-hmm. I can weaponize that to my purposes. And, you know, the Pepe Frog was born, you know, at least in spirit that day. And when I think about that weaponized autism turned onto your book, you know what I mean? Because that's the same kind of person that would do that, which is go, three lines about the Atari Jaguar, I must destroy this person for getting it wrong.
But luckily, I haven't had that many of it. At one convention, someone came up to me and shook my hand and then said everything in my book was wrong.
Really?
Yes. And he was, because I believe he was on the spectrum, he was not saying this to insult me. He was talking about an object that was on front of the table, not me. Right. So you can insult an object and not insult the person in front of you.
It's, but how would, did he have any criticisms that you listened to that were like, oh, I probably got that wrong? I mean, because I know you, you would not write something that wasn't to the best of your ability true.
I said that the boss at the end of Super Mario Brothers 2 was Bowser, and the boss at the end of Super Mario Brothers 2 was Toad.
Oh, podcast over. Get out. Get out. Is that true? Was that a mistake that you made?
I got it wrong because I did not play through Super Mario 2. I thought I remembered it.
Right.
And I got most of it right. I got Birdo right, but I forgot that they didn't swap in Bowser, that they kept Toad.
So that's interesting. And there is this thing that happens that go, well, if you don't get that one detail right that I happen to know, how do I know that anything else is right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not bringing this up because I want to relive your mistakes. Don't get me wrong.
No, that's fine.
I bring this up only because it is kind of interesting, especially we're recording this in July. It'll probably air in August.
Okay.
But we're 2 days out from the FBI. The Congress called in the FBI agent and was picking out one text message from 10,000 going, well, obviously you were part of a secret deep space conspiracy. This idea of pulling out one fact that might be a little off and then saying the entire 300 pages of the book must be wrong because of this. It's kind of crazy, isn't it?
It makes you wonder if your whole life was like that. If you just found, if you know, everyone has something that they do wrong every day, that it was a little mistake, and you're glad no one's around to see it. But if that's the one thing that's caught and put into the Jurassic Park amber, like, this is the entirety of your life.
Right. And was that playing in your head when you were doing A Mouse Divided? Like, I got to make sure everything is right.
I sent it to someone who had written another Disney book in hopes that he would be able to like magically fix everything. But a lot of the fixing would involve like going back to my source material to make sure that all of the individual quotes are right, and it's a massive undertaking. Mm-hmm. So he looked at some of it and he was able to give me some pointers and tips.
Is there when you're writing a book like this, I assume you read all the other books that have been written about Walt Disney in this time period.
That's why it took me 6 years instead of 1 year. And I had to draw a line at a certain point because I'm never going to run out of books.
Right.
Like, if you wanted to write about, I don't know, Ford cars, there's like 20 or 30 books you could read. And then when you're done with those books, you think, oh, I'm done. But you're not, because each one of those guys has written like another book where right. they may mention a Ford anecdote that may be good.
You got to read a book about the rise of American anti-Semitism in the 1920s and 30s. If you want to write a book about Ford, you got to learn about that. And that's going to lead you to a lot of places. I guess that's what's the old line? You don't finish a book, you abandon it. You know, it's that sense of trying to get it right and finding out everything that you can. How much original material did you have? Like, how much, like, what do they call it? First sources? Is that what
like,
they...
Like, new stuff?
Letters back and forth, diary entries, like that sort of stuff.
Yeah, there's about 100 things that if you knew everything about Disney, you'd go through the book and say, oh, I didn't know that. Where did you get that from? Right. And most all of that is from a guy named Richard Hubler, who wrote a Disney biography the year after Walt died. And he interviewed all of Walt's family and friends. He did everything you would want to do in order to capture, like, you know, Walt Disney right after he had died. And he wrote a wonderful book, but it was supposed to be an authorized book. And what happens when the authorized book doesn't get authorized is it just doesn't get published.
Right.
And when he died, he donated his papers to Boston University. So I went there and I read the book that had never been in print.
That's crazy to me. Number one, that's wonderful. I think that's, as a, like, as a Disney fan, people are going to want to read the book. But that level of dedication, I don't know if I have ADHD. I have thoughts in my head of like, oh, it would be great to do that. And then like 4 minutes in, I'm like, oh boy, yeah, no, I'm out. 6 years. Do you get like year four and you're just like, you know what? I don't give a shit about Disney. I don't care about this. I'm out. Or how do you keep that passion continued for six solid years?
Partly it's that I really enjoyed doing the research. I like sitting down and reading a book and not thinking I'm goofing off and I'm when I should be writing, thinking, this is it. This is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right.
And then I get at the end of the book and I've learned nothing. It's like, oh, well, I guess on to the next book. Right. Boy, I'm being really productive right now. So it's sort of just deluding yourself into thinking that you're making progress.
Name of the book is A Mouse Divided.
Yep.
Where can I get A Mouse Divided? Where's the best place? What gives you the most money if someone buys A Mouse Divided?
Oh, I need to look at my contract, but probably if you buy it from Amazon.
Go to Amazon.com, mm-hmm. Type in A Mouse Divided, Jeff Ryan, yep. Dr. Jeffrey Ryan, inventor of the artificial pancreas. Mouse Divided, go to Amazon.com. We're not done the interview quite yet because there's a couple of things I want to ask you about. I just want to get a plug in the middle of that.
Oh, thank you.
You got to go buy the book because, you know, Super Mario was great. I've not read A Mouse Divided yet, but I'm excited to. I got to ask about a Slate article you wrote.
Okay.
You wrote a Slate article.
Oh, yeah. Reading a book a day?
For 365 days.
Yeah.
You caught a lot of shit on Slate from that because you included comic books.
Yes.
Do you want to defend yourself now on the internet, Jeff, about your selection of comic books? So if you don't know, Jeff Ryan, I read Slate.com every day because I like getting angry. I found their editorial standards have not been great recently. I feel like, who was the original? Was it Michael Kinsey?
Michael Kinsey was originally. But now I feel like there's 30 different websites and a third of Twitter that's all just trying to be... Just trying to be Slate. Right. The idea of the hot take is basically the Slate pitch.
Right. Yeah. Here's everybody else thinks this. Here's my take, which is different.
Yeah. And now, bus blench is actually great for the economy. We should be happy any time that people die in Peru.
Right. Yeah. And you go, wait a second. If everyone has a hot take, no one's has a hot take, to paraphrase The Incredibles. But did you pitch this article? Did they come to you? Like, how did this come? You read one book every day for 365 days.
Yes. At first, I was just trying to do it for a week. And then I thought, well, maybe I can extend it and do it for 2 weeks or a month. And I didn't tell my wife because part of the experiment to see if I could do this was if I could also do all of the other stuff in my life.
Not take 5 hours a day and just read with nothing else going on.
Right, because you could definitely do that if you say, honey, I'm not going to be a father anymore. I'm not going to work. I'm just going to sit here and read Somerset and Maugham. And I hope you love me for it, because remember, better for worse, better for worse.
You know what? That old saw. How many marriages have died because of Somerset Maugham? Really? I mean, did he do a... did he do the one about Silas Marner? Was that him?
No.
Am I just thinking that because their names are similar?
Yeah. Yeah, I reached for a very plummy-sounding English name.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. All right. I'm thinking Silas Marner. That was a Steve Martin ill-conceived movie while back.
Simple Twist of Fate.
Simple Twist of Fate, yes. Yeah. You can see why Jeff and I were friends. We just reference things for hours, and then we leave and never see each other for 10 years. So you wanted to do this without other your wife even knowing.
Right, without dropping the ball for any of the other things I was doing. And I one of the ways I was able to do that was short books.
Right.
And comic books, as you know, are short to read.
Right.
Now, I'm not going to say I read an individual 22-page issue of Flash and called that a book.
The graphic novel.
Which were collections of 22-page issues of Flash.
Right, right. Yeah. But telling a story, you know, I mean...
Yes.
You read, you know, the Superman book, All-Star Superman, it's 12 deep. I mean, I wouldn't say deep, but there, Grant Morrison tends to write stuff where you have to stop for a second and go, wait, what? And figure it out. It's not. It's a quick read, but if you're doing it correctly, it's not a super fast read.
Right, unless you're The Flash, as I was trying to be when I was reading the Flash comics.
Thing about Flash, I think about this all the time. Whatever Flash does is at regular speed for him. So, like, when he runs to, you know, China and saves people from, like, the Great Wall falling down and then moves everybody and then he, like, individually places the bricks back for the Great Wall of China, it's fast for us, but everything's fast for the Flash. So, in his head, that's just regular time for him. His life must be a living hell. I mean, if you think about it, right? Like, like I got to run to China. Like, for him, I don't know how long that takes in his mind, but if everything is at the same speed, it's probably like an international flight is for us. I mean, sure, he's running over the ocean, and then he's got to place each individual brick of the Great Wall of China back. That's... His life is terrible. I wouldn't want the Flash's powers.
I'm hoping that the Speed Force, which is the ill-defined thing that gives him his powers, also takes that away, where like him filling up a drink carafe from Smashburger isn't like, this is taking 3.5 hours to watching the Diet Coke come in.
Right.
That it takes a regular amount of time. He can just move fast.
You know what? I forgot because Speed Force is a thing.
Yeah.
Now, you also had audiobooks in this. I assume that you listened to on your way to work and back.
Yes, and I wanted to say in the article, I'm counting graphic novel collections, I'm counting audiobooks. If I read a particularly good Chex box, I'm going to count the Chex box as a book.
And I remember reading this and first off going, oh, that's interesting. And second off, then reading the byline and going, wait, I know that guy. And I was very happy for you to see, anytime I see your name pop up, the whole reason why we're doing this, I know you had been working on a book about Disney, but you popped up in my Audible feed as a suggestion. And I was like, holy crap, I got to get Jeff on the podcast. But I saw that. I was very happy. And then I slide into Slate's comments. While not as vitriolic and terrible as a lot of places on the internet, there was still a lot of pseudo-intellectuals calling you out on stuff. So I want to take this opportunity now to say, first off, to all the pseudo-intellectuals who post on Slate, you're a bunch of assholes. Nobody likes you. Second off, Jeff Ryan, do you have anything? This is a 5-year-old article now, 10-year-old article?
Oh, it's 7 years old, and I know this because you may not believe this, but I'm still doing it.
Oh, you're still doing a book a day, every day?
I stopped 2 years ago because I felt like I was able to do a book a day, and it wasn't a challenge. So as of last year, I'm now doing 500.
You're doing 500 books a year?
Yeah.
Wow. And what are you learning? What?
I'm learning all about the Speed Force because they're mostly comic books.
Well, I mean, you and I are both big comic book fans.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I have found that, like, when I get into a reading jag, it all sort of swims together in my head. And it feels like reading... when I did it for school, or maybe if I was doing it for a project, I would read for posterity. Like, I would read to remember. And sometimes now in my dotage, I feel like I'm reading just to have something to do. And it becomes a more ephemeral pleasure, like watching a movie might be, where you're like, oh, that was good. And then if you ask me about it, I can give you 8 details. And then I'm like, that's all I got.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Did you watch Battlestar Galactica when it was on?
The original Battlestar Galactica or the new one with the hot robots?
The remake, but either one is fine.
I watched it in DVD collections after. Okay.
That's what I did also.
Yeah.
But I was watching a TV show and there was someone on who looked vaguely familiar and I looked him up and he was one of the robots. He was one of the Cylons. Right. And if this was 10 years ago, I could have told you that guy's name,
right.
His number, every appearance he had had, all the different types of robots he had played, the different personalities, but now it's all gone.
Right.
And I'm okay with that because you're not supposed to, like, hold TV so sacred.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. TV becomes a thing that you just watch and then you're done with.
And books don't need to be held that sacred either. Not everything is going to be Middlemarch, and not everything you need to hold in your head forever. Some of it can be the ephemeral pleasures, like you were saying.
You know what? Maybe when you do a lot of reading, mm-hmm. it becomes like what people must have felt in the 19th century, which is, this is just a thing I'm doing, and they didn't know which of those books were going to go on to be great, you know? I have a theory that Mad Men is going to be studied 25 to 30 years from now, because we're going to look back at this time of peak TV, mm-hmm. and I think that that's a plane going over, by the way. Speaking of, that's D.B. Cooper is going to jump out of that, speaking of Mad Men. Did you watch Mad Men?
I did, yeah.
I thought it was as novelistic, and just the choices that Matthew Weiner, my favorite name in all of television, Matthew Weiner makes in that, the ellipses that he puts. I felt that David Chase with The Sopranos would a lot of times put in ellipses just to mess with the audience.
Like when the Russians scream for revenge and then never show it up again.
Right, and he liked to tweak people about that. I still find the ending of that television show the most disconcerting and scary thing I've ever seen on television.
I was there yesterday.
In darkness? Or the diner?
I was there in the Holston's Diner where they were filming. That's in my town.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was there with my family.
That freaked me out so much, because I immediately went to He Died. If you haven't seen the... spoiler alert for 35-year-old show. When at the beginning of that season, where he goes, I think it just, you never see it happen, and it just cuts to black. Mm-hmm. When he cuts to black there, and originally I think David Chase wanted 30 seconds, not 10, but they compromised. If you start to think, oh my God, he was killed, and oh my God, this is what his afterlife is, mm-hmm. especially considering earlier in that season, he had an afterlife that, was more vibrant, you know, like maybe when there was still something to save of his soul, there was something where he could go. But when it was dark, I still get scared about that. That's my deepest fear. Hell for me is just no more me.
It's just an empty dark room with nothing going on.
Yeah. Hell isn't other people. Hell is not paying the electric bill. But yeah, I'm thinking about that. Like, we watched shit tons of TV. No one is going to, like, you know, 200 years from now, go like, oh my God, season 8 of The Big Bang Theory, that's where we peaked out. You know, you don't need to remember it. Maybe somebody's going to be writing a book about the early 21st century, and they're going to have to watch all those episodes of Big Bang Theory, and they're going to be on a Hollow podcast one day talking about it. But yeah, I think that's kind of interesting. You swim in the books, and all of a sudden, you're just part of the stream.
Yeah, and then when I'm, for writing at least, when I'm done with the book, I can move on to something else, and I'll try to keep an interest in what I was reading before. Like, I'll read a video game book every year or so, but there are video game books that I'm never going to read, and I had done that before. And there are Disney books that'll come out that I'm not going to read anymore because I've moved on to something else.
That's the next question. Can you talk about? Are you on to the third book? Do you have one happening? Give us a preview.
I'm editing it now, so it's mostly done, but I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to find a publisher for it. But that's the standard writer problem.
Well, I mean, at this point, like, you have two books under your belt. You're kind of a known commodity. And I remember you saying you wanted to be able to be the person who did biographies of fictional characters. And you're two for two.
Yes. And the third one is right in line with that. And I'll tell you when we're not recording what I'm writing about.
All right. Yeah. Great. Well, if you want to know what Jeff Ryan wrote about this time, you should go to Amazon.com. Jeff Ryan, J-E-F-F-R-Y-A-N, a mouse divided, take the statement, a house divided, and take the H and turn it to an M for Mickey Mouse. Yeah. My podcast listeners are dumb, so I have to walk them through. You know who you are, dumb podcast listeners. Go buy the book immediately. He's a good guy. He's an interesting guy, and you're going to love the book. Jeff, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, man.
This was great. We're in your backyard. We're in your house. This is wonderful.
Yeah, I'm literally in my backyard because my wife invited 900 people over to my house without talking to me about it.
Now, I brought 6 donuts before, and I said they're up for grabs. How many donuts do you think are left?
My guess is if there's any that don't have icing, they'll be left, and the other ones will be strewn about with blood and pain as the fight had ensued. That was so nice of you to bring the donuts, and so nice of you to do the podcast. Thank you so much. You're going to Haddon Heights now, right?
Yes, there's a little one-day Comic-Con, and libraries are doing this now, where they're just opening up their doors on a Sunday and saying, bring your family down, we've got vendors, we've got food, we've got weird nerd stuff.
Are you one of the weird nerds?
Exactly.
All right. Yeah. Jeff Ryan, everybody. And is there a place to find you online? Do you want to plug a Twitter or a Facebook? Or?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter with Jeff_Ryan, and I made a book website, amousedivided.com.
Check out both of those. Thank you, Jeff. And go buy the book, you morons. All right, let me try that again. Go buy the book, you wonderful people. All right, Bill, Jessica, Jay from the future. Now it's back to you.
And we're back.
Yay!
My God, fascinating. I'm not so sure. I'm thinking that does he get political at all?
In his book about A Mouse Divided?
Does Mickey get political?
I don't know. It's possible.
I think
I question everything now.
Mickey was a Pinkerton Union Buster in the early cartoons. A lot of people don't know this. He was beating up
all right,
Reds.
So we're good. That was great. Jeff is fantastic.
Can I tell you something?
He can come on anytime.
He should come on again.
There's a movie.
What's
called
his Twitter handle?
I don't know. There's a movie called L.A. Story, where Steve Martin's leaving for the weekend.
Never
and
seen
he's
it.
Just throwing sunny days up on the thing because it's L.A. And he goes, who gives a shit? It's just going to be sunny. It's always sunny. And it hard cut to it raining. This is, I feel like our podcast right now is the equivalent of up just throwing sunnies up on the wall because we're just like, you know what, we're done. We're moving on.
No, we've had a very productive evening.
Yeah, we've done 39 podcasts.
How many have we done?
We're good through 2027.
That's why I don't have to see you guys for a long time.
Yeah, we're not going to see each other
again. I didn't say hi to Jay when he walked up. I like said hi to Mike and then I was like, oh, yeah. I've seen too much of you this week.
Well, I almost broke up Chase and Jessica.
Strangles mice.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like me.
Yeah, talking about worlds.
And Kristen about the show.
Yeah.
I talked Chase into calling the podcast and we were like, oh, we don't live together. So many things are going to find out about each other living together. Jay goes like, he strangles mice.
Wow. That
doesn't sound like
Does
me.
He?
Does he?
Well, I mean, did he? Here's what I say. I don't believe he does. However, I know Jay probably asked that question. Now, did Chase answer the question, or was it like, "Oh my God, Jessica, what have you got me into?"
Just think of the whole episode about kidney stones and being a neurologist.
I was Jay Black, the millennial nephrologist, my new super popular character.
And there was a mouse strangling theme throughout the entire episode.
I walked in on the cargo shorts. I skipped the whole. No, you can crush him.
You crush his little larynx.
I don't know. I've never strangled a mouse. So I have no idea.
And the mouse
Why
goes,
would you want to?
No,
think
please.
About mouse
no.
traps, though.
Was that?
They're much more
the glue traps. They get stuck. They chew their own legs
off.
Yeah,
we talked about all of that.
Yeah, no, I use it.
Really?
Yeah.
I use a, what they call a compassionate mouse trap.
It was not good.
I walked in and it was very, we should probably end this.
My mouse trap is a little mouse comes out and talks the mouse into killing itself. Right. Little mouse comes out and goes, you know, Donald Trump is president. And the mouse goes, I'm going to kill myself.
All right. Thank you. Follow us wherever I've been telling you to follow us.
Good end to the Mickey Mouse section.
Oh my God. That's how we ended Mickey Mouse. What the hell's wrong with us?
A Mouse Divided.
All right.
By Chase Gibson.
All right. Meanwhile, she's Mrs. Gibson now. We're like 17 episodes
Gibson.
Ahead.
You know what? She could have a baby by now.
Wait a minute. We do have a big event coming up at the end. When
this is going to air in 2075,
Bill. September 29th, which is CFC, and we have October 6th, which is Princeton Comedy Show.
Right. I feel like
when
there's so much.
When is this?
You know what? This is going to be post-singularity. We're all going to be inside of a computer when this airs.
All right,
let's close this up and start up.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.